Since this is Josephine Baker Day, that's Josephine Baker singing Dreams. When you're ready, one of our great songs around. So, Josephine Baker. We'll talk about her in another day, but let's talk now to our two guests in the studio here. Delegate Heather Mazier is in the studio, represents the 20th District, and of course is candidate for governor, the Reverend Delma Coates, senior pastor of Mount Enim Baptist Church in Clinton, Maryland, running for lieutenant governor. Welcome. Good to have you all be here.
Always great to be here,
Thanks
Mark.
For having
Good
us
to see you again. Both. How's life on the campaign trail?
Couldn't be more fun.
So join us here, 410-319-8888. Get those calls coming in. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, 410-319-8888, for Delegate Heather Mazier and Reverend Delman Coates, who are running to be the leaders of the state of Maryland in the Democratic primary, 410-319-8888. So something, and this is a question you hate, but I got to ask this question. Let me say this. So we'll start this way.
Good morning to you, too, Mark.
Good morning to you, too. With the last, Anthony McCarthy, my colleague, had a program here right after the debates, and the gubernatorial debates. And people on his program were kind of lauding you as a candidate who said the best stuff, the strongest voice on this debate. And people love what you said. But then all these people started saying, yep, but I'm voting for Anthony Brown. Because we know he's going to win, so why throw my vote away? And so that became a sentiment on the show. And I was going, if they think Heather Mazier is the strongest candidate in the race, why is everybody calling in saying, yes, but?
This campaign from the beginning has been about breaking the illusions of impossibility. We can do this, and we're seeing how we're doing it every day. People across the state in living rooms, community centers, senior centers are responding to our message about what we can do to help Maryland live up to its full potential. We're the only candidates in this race that want to turn the minimum wage into a living wage. We're the only ones with a truly universal pre-K plan to really tackle and address the achievement gap in our schools. There are defining differences in this race that are becoming more and more known as the race continues. The debates are a great opportunity for fleshing that out. We're going to be having our television ads up on the air real soon. And I turned the viability question on its head the other way. When there are two other candidates in this race that have the airwaves all to themselves for weeks, spend millions of dollars apiece promoting their ads, and the undecided numbers go up another 21 points, are they able to win? Are they exciting an electorate? Are they able to turn people out to vote for them? That's what Delman and I are doing. We are exciting people. We are engaging with people. When undecided voters are introduced to us, they pick us, and we're going to win this race.
Delman?
Well, Mark, when I hear people say this, and thanks for having us on.
It's great having you both in the studio.
I think it won't be
the last time before 35 days from now.
Okay,
I hope.
That's awesome. It really causes me to think about our democracy. I decided to join Heather because my sense has been that Annapolis has drifted away from the people, and we really need elected officials who are going to be accountable to the voters and accountable to the people. And it's critically important in a free, pluralistic democracy that people really reclaim what it means to have a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. The note that Heather just referenced, that the other two campaigns have spent collectively $4 million recently in ads, and that's just driven the undecideds up. That really shows how aware Maryland voters are, that voters in Maryland don't determine viability based on visibility, but based upon vision. And whenever voters have an opportunity to hear Heather and her vision for the state of Maryland, they are overwhelmingly coming to support her vision for the state.
Folks, 410-319-8888, maybe you're among those growing 21%. Your chance to have a conversation here with Heather Mazier and Delman Coates. I'd like to hear your thoughts for them. 410-319-8888.
And just to clarify, Mark, that was just that the undecideds increased by 21
right.
points. It's 54% undecided total.
That's pretty amazing.
It's really amazing.
This late date in a campaign,
really
54%
exactly.
undecided?
Anyone can win when there's 54% undecided.
Mm-hmm. 410-319-8888. I do have a question about that, but let's go first to the phones. And Hillary, in Baltimore City, you're on the air, 410-319-8888.
Hey there, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm a resident of Baltimore City. Since it appears that we are not going to hear from Anthony Brown at this next debate, I want to know why Heather and Delman are the best candidates for our city because we have really serious problems in this city that have not been dealt with in the past 8 years.
Well, I appreciate the call, Hillary. And Delman and I have made it very clear that we are running to be the governor and lieutenant governor of the entire state, and particularly Baltimore. We've joked we spend so much time in the city that the mayor should start charging us taxes. And
not a bad idea.
And you know, Mark, from my years in the General Assembly, that my engagement in issues that matter to Baltimore didn't start with my entry into the governor's race. I was engaged 3 years ago at the ground level in touring schools like Hollibert Academy and seeing children taking exams in their coats because the heaters aren't working and that they can't drink out of the water fountains because of the lead pipes, bathroom toilet stalls not flushing and working properly. That I'd been in prison conditions that were better than what some of the Baltimore City schools were experiencing. And I worked with BUILD and ACLU Education Reform Project and the Baltimore Education Coalition and others to put together an approach on how we could leverage big money to rebuild Baltimore City schools. That collective action was successful in getting $1 billion of new construction money in 2013. But we can't stop there. That's just phase one funding. Delman and I have a plan on how we get phase two funding for the city schools. I was involved in fighting against the building of the youth jail here in the city because the current administration wanted to put a 120-bed facility for what were 40 youth in the system at the time at a cost of $70 million. And we know that in our current mass incarceration strategies, if we build it, we'll fill it. And we have to shift this cradle-to-prison pipeline and start focusing on investing in affirmative opportunities for our youth instead. Our early childhood education program that Delman and I have proposed isn't just about pre-K. It's about a significant boost in funding for after-school and summer programs for our youth as well. And on issue after issue, from public safety to education reforms to addressing the income inequality gap, we are the campaign that has the voters of Baltimore most in mind.
Thanks, Heather. And I think as Heather mentioned, in order to address many of the issues that confront this city, whether it's crime, the recreational facilities that are closing, schools that continue to fail our kids, we really need a governor who has a sense of urgency to address these problems. And one of the things that we know is Heather has been present in the city of Baltimore prior to this election season. Hillary just mentioned why we're going to be present at next week's debate, and that's because we value this city in a tremendous way. It's reflected in Heather's track record, her present, and it'll continue to be the case in her future. We know that in order to turn this city around, that it's fundamentally about shared values, not about shared zip code, and Heather shares the values that are deeply a concern to those in the city of Baltimore.
So just the debate's coming up Tuesday on WBFF here in Baltimore, Channel 45, right, that I think Lieutenant Governor Brown has said he's not going to participate in. But again, you all agreed to three debates, and so he's saying that this is not one of the three agreed debates, so I'm not posting.
That's what he's saying. Our campaigns were involved for a very long time in negotiating these three debates, and it was our understanding all along that they were three televised debates, and we would do more. We actually had proposed as many as seven.
I remember that.
Transparency in how we govern is important, and that includes the campaign trail. I would debate my colleagues anytime, any place, anywhere to allow more voters an opportunity to engage with us and share with us their concerns and questions, and let us talk about our vision and our values.
And that morning, there's Lieutenant Governor's debate taking place
at 10 a.m. Next Tuesday, May 27th, is the Lieutenant Governor debate.
And on that day, I think Lieutenant Governor Brown was, and his Lieutenant Gubernatorial candidate can be in the studio here on May the 27th at 9 a.m. The Parents Coalition have tweeted in, will they enforce Maryland Constitution and guarantee all public school children a free public education? MCPS charges fees for classes. I'm not sure what MCPS is, Montgomery County Public Schools?
Absolutely. We are supportive of free and great K-12 public education. That's actually the one thing, the one policy issue that's enshrined in Maryland's Constitution is to give all of our children an access to a quality free public K-12 education program. And we have to keep building on the fact that for the last 5 years, our schools have been rated number one in the nation, but Delman and I aren't pleased until all of our schools are able to claim that distinction. There's a lot of work left to be done, and we're excited to be the team to do it.
There's a lot of question about what we mean when we say we have the number one school system in the country. I think it depends on what schools you're going to.
That's right.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of kids here who do really well in school in Baltimore City, but because of the lack of investment and many other reasons, if they get an A in Baltimore City, it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as if you get an A in Montgomery County or Howard County. And that's
the unfairness
of our education system.
Absolutely. And so many of these legacy issues on remediation needs in higher education from the failings within our K-12 system can be addressed at the very front end if we get serious about early childhood education. Unfortunately, in Maryland, it still matters what your socioeconomic status is and what your race is to determine whether or not you're going to be successful in school. And we know it doesn't have to be that way. When we invest in early childhood education initiatives from birth to age 5, we can eliminate the disparities and give every child a chance to enter school ready to learn at the exact same pace. That's why our pre-K program is truly universal, not just for some 4-year-olds, but all 4-year-olds. And we also provide a half day for 3-year-olds in working class families that are earning $70,000 a year or less. And then from birth until you get into pre-K, we're giving real meaningful assistance to families to afford child care assistance. Children need access to a safe, nurturing, educational environment. And how many families do we know where a second parent is working almost exclusively to pay the child care cost? We want to fix the current child care subsidy so that it doesn't just work for low-income families, but is a benefit for middle-class families as well. We need to tackle this early childhood achievement gap with serious vigor, and we're the only campaign that has a plan to do it.
So, go ahead, Delman.
I was going to add to that that our plan also calls for addressing the issue of after-school investments and summer opportunities as well. I think this is what makes our attempt to close the achievement gap in Maryland truly comprehensive. We address universal pre-K for 4-year-olds, half a day for 3-year-olds, the child care emphasis, after school and summer opportunities, which makes our plan truly comprehensive.
I mean, let's talk about the issues of money in this state. Some of the people say that arguments are made that the call for a living wage, which is much different than a minimum wage, much higher, a tax on corporations, not closing loopholes, going back to the tax on the very, very wealthy in the state. People argue it can be counterproductive. It'll force businesses, push businesses out of the state, that Virginia, they say, is moving ahead by leaps and bounds because of its low corporate tax rate, because of its low tax rate, period, on some of the wealthiest and the rest. And that what you're proposing is actually counterproductive.
Not so. Let's talk about that corporate tax loophole that we're trying to close. It's a loophole where a handful of multi-state companies that exist are taking the money they're earning in Maryland and hiding it on the books in the other states where they operate. Other states have closed this loophole. As a matter of fact, 15 of the top manufacturing states in the country, 10 of them have closed this loophole and have not seen negative impact. Some of the companies that are benefiting from this are companies that wouldn't move out of the state, like Comcast and Pepco. We have to make sure everyone pays their fair share. That's all this is about. We're not trying to make anyone pay more. We're just saying you operate in Maryland. You should fairly claim the money you make in Maryland and pay taxes on it. And when you do, there'd be about $200 million of new revenue that would come in that we would dedicate to small business tax relief. Small businesses are the backbones of our economy. They're the job creators in our communities. And the way we get to a living wage in Annapolis is by bringing both the workers and the businesses together. We have a vision for an economy that doesn't pit workers against businesses. We can ask our small businesses to pay our workers more, get to a living wage. If what we're doing is putting meaningful tax reform on the table to help small businesses instead of the special interest always having their eye out for the big companies in our state.
I'm curious what it means to kind of be have a different tax structure that we may have now for small business. I mean, what does that mean concretely?
Well, I was just going to say the idea that our tax rate is driving millionaires and corporations away from Maryland is really a conservative talking point. Right now, we have the third lowest corporate tax rate in the country. Maryland has the highest rate of millionaires per capita in the country. And so the idea that our tax rate is driving millionaires and corporations away from the state, it's really a conservative talking point that we really don't embrace. We really believe that if we can close these corporate loopholes, as Heather just mentioned, to make corporations, a few very large corporations who make hundreds of millions of dollars in Maryland and pay no taxes, if they pay their fair share, we would pass that $200 million along to our small businesses in the form of a tax.
So, folks, if you're among those undecided, 410-319-8888. If you're among those folks who called the station the other week and were saying, well, I like Heather Mazur, but let's hear your butts and get on the air here. 410-319-8888. I want to hear what you have to say. Janet's the next caller up. We're going to go to her phone call. And we're going to explore questions around our utility system, around the Chesapeake Bay, about the future of Baltimore City, and marijuana legalization, and more. Join us here at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Delegate Heather Mazur and the Reverend Delma Coates, who are running to sit in Annapolis as our leaders next year. So time to go out here with This Magic Moment by the Drifters. Rudy Lewis of the Drifters died on this day, and remember that great sound. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And then it happened. It took me by surprise. What would you do if I sang?
With a little help from my friends, Joe Cocker, born on this day in 1944. So we celebrate him on this day with a piece of his most famous music. And on our way back to our conversation, I want to remind you that to ask you if you need to get a getaway. Like WEA on Facebook today for your opportunity to win a two-night stay at the Grand Hotel and passes to the Exit Zero Jazz Festival featuring vocal jazz royalty Dee Dee Bridgewater, the Roy Hargrove Quintet, the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, and more. The winner will be selected Wednesday morning, 7:30 a.m., here on the Baltimore Blend. Again, like us on Facebook for your opportunity to win from WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we are here with Heather Mazur and Delma Coates, running to become the next governor, lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland. I just was talking to Delegate Mazur about the color choice that she's wearing today, which was orange and blue. And they are the Morgan State University colors. And lo and behold, they're your campaign colors.
Indeed. It's a winning combination, Mark.
Right. So on the way up, folks, I do want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll go to Janet, our next caller up, here in 2 minutes. But so there are some very tough things here we face in the state of Maryland. People sometimes put these things in the back burner because it's so intangible for most folks to kind of wrestle with, because most people are not farmers and not part of the land. But the Chesapeake Bay is in miserable shape.
Mm-hmm.
The governor could have put in the phosphorus management tool this year, which would have gone a long way to measuring what gets dumped in the bay and what doesn't, and that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
The certain parts of that was the lobbying and power industries in Maryland who are saying we want to put this off for an economic study when everything was already agreed upon between farmers, environmentalists, the governor's office, and more. So what does your administration do about that?
We're the ones that will get it done. I come from a farming family. My grandparents were farmers, four generations before them were, and I own and operate a 34-acre farm on the Eastern Shore with my spouse, Deborah. And I'm also an environmentalist. And I understand how to bridge the divide and the gap between the agricultural community and the environmentalist community on what we need to do to bring the bay back to its top condition. We have to care most about what's flowing into the bay and keeping our rivers and streams and all the tributaries that are going into the bay clean, as well as our overarching strategies for cleaning up the bay itself, getting our oyster populations reboosted. We used to have enough oysters that they naturally, the ecology of the bay cleaned itself. The oysters are the kidneys of the bay. They would filter out all of the impurities, and we just don't have enough of them anymore to do the work. So really doubling down on our oyster restoration work is critical. Protecting bayside land to help with runoff is critical. Staying on top of our three-part strategy as a state to address stormwater runoff, wastewater management treatment, and agricultural pollution runoff are all key. We cannot retreat from any of that. Do you know, Mark, that some pregnant women in this state are advised by their health care providers not to swim in the bay because of its potential negative condition on their pregnancy?
Mm-hmm.
That's just unacceptable. We can't allow that to be the future of the bay anymore. And we have to make tough decisions, and we have to be willing to stand up to powerful special interests to get this done. And the Mazur Coates administration will be the team that does it.
Well, we know the bay is our greatest natural resource, and it's going to take an environmentalist governor to make sure that the work that needs to take place happens to make sure the bay continues to be clean. It's why we received the endorsement of the Sierra Club, because the Sierra Club trusts Heather to make sure we clean up the bay and to protect Maryland's environment. There's no question that Heather is the environmentalist candidate for governor in this race.
410-319-8888. Come on, you undecideds. Let's hear from you. Why are you undecided? Janet, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I saw in the debate, Heather, that you're a small business owner and supporter of the Affordable Care Act. I'm just interested to know if your business lobbied for the health care industry. Thanks.
Thank you, Janet. I appreciate the call. Our healthcare business at its height, we had 9 employees, and I am the only candidate in this race that is a small business owner and the only one with a plan to help them grow. Our small business worked with community health centers, nonprofit, visiting nurses, health information technology companies, hospitals, to navigate and understand at the federal level what congressional legislation was being passed and what the regulatory impact was, and helped writing rules and regulations for those healthcare providers at the federal level.
So we did have a couple of Facebook comments here. Let me get to one. 410-319-8888. Come to Larry, your question just a moment. Let's read this Facebook question real fast. I'd like to ask Heather Mazur how she now views money and politics after running for months on public financing against the other candidates who have access to big corporate funding. Have any of her feelings changed or shifted at all? Perry Wheeler. Question.
Okay. Thank you, Perry. I appreciate the question. I think that we have become even more resolute in believing that we have to get the influence of money out of politics from our experience in this campaign. Delman and I are the first candidates in 20 years to opt into the public campaign finance system. We did it because we wanted to restore integrity to the election process and return Annapolis to the people, that we aren't responsible after we win to the corporate interests who have funded our campaign. We're responsive to the people who have rallied to support the message and the vision of what we want to get done after we win. The current public financing system doesn't require you to not take corporate contributions, but that's an extra added step that Delman and I did to show good faith with the voters that these are the kinds of changes we're going to bring to Annapolis, so we don't take corporate money. We have put together instead an army of grassroots volunteers and supporters. We have 92% of all the contributions we've raised have come in $250 or less. Just average Maryland voters wanting to own a piece of this collective vision of what we're going to do together after we win. And it is challenging to run a statewide campaign limited to spending no more than $2.6 million. We had to make tough decisions early on that we weren't going to buy things like bumper stickers and yard signs because of that expense would take away from the cost of having our commercials on TV. But what's been fascinating is to see how our supporters, that you talk about that enthusiasm gap, our supporters are making their own signs. I get tweeted photos of, there was a truck in Howard County the other day along a major intersection that had a giant homemade Mizzier Coats sign in the back. These are people who are incredibly enthusiastic about what we're doing and know that in order for us to change the system across the board for all candidates, we have to run and win and show how it gets done.
Let me ask this question, though. I'll push that a tad further because there's some really key issues I want to ask about and not get stuck on this. Is that part of the problem that any campaign would have in the situation you're in? You've done this really nice TV commercial, but now you got to figure out how to get it on television and off the internet. You don't have bumper stickers, and the psychology of most campaigns is that you have to have bumper stickers and you have to have lawn signs and you have to put your name out everywhere, mm-hmm. or people aren't going to know who you are. And there is some level of truth to that because people who have money can put their name out there and go, you know, Brown, Gansler, whoever. But Monsieur Coates, I mean, part of the catch is for people to know who you are, to hear that name over and over. They don't see it or hear it, then does that hurt you?
Yard signs and bumper stickers don't vote. People do. And we have the best advertisements in the entire state because they're coming from word of mouth. Neighbor-to-neighbor engagement, that enthusiasm factor cannot be underscored. And we've done well enough at raising resources from all of our supporters and running a very efficient campaign that we're going to have the resources we need to get up on TV and to communicate our message to those undecided voters.
And consider, Mark, what Heather mentioned earlier, that after spending $4 million, the other two campaigns have just driven up undecided. So the conventional logic as it relates to campaigning does not apply here. The voters are very much interested in vision and values, and we have decided to allow our principles and our values serve as the guiding principles for our campaign. And my resolve for publicly financed campaigns has only been strengthened. Heather's comment, I think the listeners should keep in mind, as she mentioned, that we're not required not to take corporate money as a part of our campaign, but we added that's a self-imposed limitation that we placed upon ourselves to not take money from corporations and lobbyists that do business with the state. And we're going to do this, and I'm really excited. I want to encourage the listeners to make sure that on June 24th, they're going to the polls on that Tuesday.
And let me also say that because we're not taking corporate money and we're not taking state contractor money, we will take everyone else's money, though, the voters of this state who want to invest in this campaign and keep getting this winning message out. You know, come give us your $25, $50 becomes $50, $100 under the public match and gives us the resources we need to keep communicating this message about ending politics as usual.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Larry. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
I was calling about Curtis Bay, Brooklyn, the Erie missions. There's a particular Erie mission that comes out, and it's kind of sporadic, and it's a very heavy, tarred diesel smell. And one night when I had a very light fan running to bring air inside my window to relax on a clear night, the emissions came into my room. I couldn't get them out, and I had to drive across town to a Walmart and sleep there for about 5 or 6 hours till 1 in the morning.
Wow.
And then I finally gave up and came home. It's not always constant, but I think that a particular industry, maybe an oil refinery or it could be an incinerator or something, but it's a diesel smoke thing, I think there's some kind of violation. And my philosophy on this is that, you know, we don't have, you know, a lot of rotary phones anymore. And I'm wondering why, you know, how the emissions can be really controlled from the 1950s standard to, you know, 21st century. It's really bad. And I'm wondering what the candidates think about that.
Larry, I'm so sorry you had to experience that. No one should have to leave the comfort of their home to sleep in a Walmart to have fresh air. That is just really tragic. And unfortunately, we're experiencing in Southwest Baltimore, there has been a legacy of industrial emissions and environmental concerns that are only going to be increased if the current proposal to build the intermodal CSX facility goes to Morrill Park, as has been proposed. We already know, in looking at building that facility there, that the environmental record of that area, the wages of the residents of those communities, it's already a very disenfranchised community. And unfortunately, there are decisions that get made sometimes that will only add to those problems. I'm pushing for us to not build that facility in Morrill Park because of its impact on the residents in the area who are already dealing with so many environmental impacts from the convergence of the port traffic, 95 traffic, and a range of industrial concerns. We can build that in another community that in Jessup, for example. Another proposed area that is on the books is only has like 3 people within a quarter mile of where the project would be built versus 1,400 people in Morrill Park. And to get to your specific problem, Larry, it's part of that. Not only do we have to address the underlying problems of getting tougher on our environmental standards, on our enforcement of those standards, because that's what's really key, we have to not exacerbate the issue by continuing to look at communities in Southwest Baltimore as a place where we can continue to dump and grow the problems instead of fixing them.
Let me go back to the phones here. We have tweets coming in. We have another Facebook question here, 410-319-8888. The Reverend Akina Patti, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much for having this candidate on. And I remember you having, I believe, a lieutenant governor candidate on before. And I know I called in the engineer and asked them to give them my phone number, my personal phone number, so I could be of help. And unfortunately, I haven't gotten a call back. I don't know what happened in that loop. But what I say is this. I heard the candidate for governor at the Build meeting, which is an organization I helped start with Reverend Vernon Nathaniel Dobson and some others. And so I took the time to cheer her when she was making her statement, because I thought she was saying some very progressive things. And I personally wrote my information down and gave it to her and asked her to call me and see how I could be of help. Then I met her outside, she will remember, when people were leaving, to reinforce that. And the point I'm making is this, that as I listen to progressive candidates, including going back to Ralph Nader and some other candidates, and you know I traveled with Reverend Jesse Jackson, who was a master at building coalitions and alliance right. and rainbow coalitions, and we beat people all over this country that had money and name and incumbent politicians, including in the state of Maryland. And so what I'm saying is, knowing that you ran Billy Murphy's campaign, when you ran against Schaefer, and you did an excellent job, and unfortunately, there were people who still wanted to be on the plantation
right.
and not be free at a time when we were electing black mayors all over this country. The point I'm making is this. What I feel is this, that we have a progressive candidate here, as we've had progressive candidates in the past. And what I've seen once I've done my homework is I see an administration, I mean, this campaign administration, that's Lily White, even though she has a black lieutenant governor on the ticket. And there's something wrong with that picture. And I was saying to her, and she remembers, and I'll stop here. I said to her, I believe she could win. I said, you cannot win a campaign, in my opinion, but you can win a movement. I said, you can take pink ribbon and go from pink ribbon at the dollar store to pink on Athlete's Creek. So that represents breast cancer, because that's a movement, as we did with South Africa.
Okay, Doctor, we only have a few minutes left of this game. We have a lot of callers here. But So your question you wanted to answer is what? Doctor?
That there's a community out here that's diverse and African-American, and aside from her lieutenant governor, at what point will her campaign administration reflect her administration will be multiracial and not predominantly white?
All right. Good question, Ducky. I mean, Delegate Mazier?
I think that Delman and I have shown throughout our commitment to public and community service that we are all best served by having a very big table with lots of seats and diverse voices around the table in order to reflect all communities and give fair and balanced representation across the board. And our administration will look that way as well.
So when he says your campaign looks only white other than Lieutenant Governor, how do you respond to that?
I don't know how. It's just not true. We have 12 paid employees, and a good percentage of those are people of color. So mm-hmm. I don't know where that.
Absolutely, I agree. I co-sign on that. A good percentage of our staff is of color, and our support at the grassroots level is incredibly diverse. So,
410-319-8888 on Facebook. Linda K. Brown just wrote in, many in the single-payer healthcare movement hope that Maryland can be the next state after Vermont to implement a single-payer system. Will you support a single-payer system, yes or no?
Linda, I absolutely support us going down the road that Vermont has gone down. We have to first fix the underlying problems with our healthcare exchange and get all of this rocky road established so that people can have access to the healthcare that they were promised under the Affordable Care Act, and that includes expanding and making Medicaid more eligible. We can do things right now like allowing families who qualify for food stamps to automatically qualify for Medicaid instead of making low-income families go through both barriers. We put a number of changes on the table we'd like to see happen to keep expanding health insurance. And while we're doing that, in preparation for 2017, just like Vermont has done, in 2017, the federal government will give states innovation waivers to try additional outside-of-the-box thinking on how to get people even more access to health care. And Vermont's gone down the road of studying whether or not they can be a state that would be able to successfully implement a single-payer model in Vermont. There's still a lot of research and studying and bringing stakeholders together to determine how that would work in Maryland, particularly with our all-payer system with our hospitals, but it's something we should definitely explore.
Darcy Placilla tweets in at Mark Sanner, at Heather Mazzia, what are your plans to help the homeless population in Maryland?
Homelessness is an incredibly challenging issue that Delman and I are very committed to addressing. First, you have to address affordable housing, and we would increase the funding for the Maryland Affordable Housing Trust by $25 million a year, so a $100 million increase over 4 years. We also want to end income discrimination that exists in housing. And we also want to focus that money in the Affordable Housing Trust to build affordable housing units in high opportunity areas where you're connected to transportation and near schools and jobs that are high demand and sometimes pricing low-income families out of those regions. Directly on homelessness, we're taking a look at what Utah is doing. They have a home-first response to homelessness that has focused on putting people on the edge of homelessness, connecting them with housing, and understanding that that investment on the back end is more than paid for from the savings associated with the cost of health care and mental health services and a range of problems that end up existing with the homeless population. If Utah can address and end homelessness, certainly Maryland can go down the road of trying to do the same.
And, Mark, I would add addressing our foreclosure crisis is going to be key and critical as well. Maryland right now has the second highest foreclosure rate in the country. And when people are put out of their homes, this is
So how do you address that?
Well, I think we have to have elected officials who are more interested in protecting homeowners and families than they are in the bankers who created the foreclosure crisis in the first place. Heather proposed legislation during this legislative session that would eliminate deficiency judgments in our state. There are a range of steps and strategies that can be taken to address foreclosure and mortgage fraud, addressing the question of deficiency judgments in our state. And so it's critically important that we have a governor and lieutenant governor who are very much interested in protecting homeowners to improve the foreclosure situation.
There are a bunch of things here. We have about 8 minutes left. I do want to get some more calls in here. 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. You're listening to the voices of Heather Mazzia and Delman Coates. who are running, obviously, as a ticket for governor, lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, 35 days till the primary election, 410-319-8888. One of the things that came out in this campaign is you started talking about our utility system, electric utilities, Pepco, BG&E. Some people think it sounds like you're moving in the direction towards the public ownership of utilities. People say it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to purchase in a state like Maryland. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting?
That is not what we are suggesting. In our proposal, where we talk about ending the perpetual franchise and requesting and requiring the utilities to come back before the state every 10 to 15 years, we're open to what the number is. But right now, it's like 99-year virtual perpetual franchise, so that you get in the business, you've just got those rights forever. It is always important to come back before the state and regulators and the public to be responsive to a range of concerns and underlying issues that we would want addressed. The Conowingo Dam, for example, is under review right now. The licensing, Exelon had to come back in front of FERC to get the dam relicensed, and that process has allowed for important questions to be asked about whether or not there should be a requirement for some dredging to happen with that, so that the silt that is coming from the Susquehanna into the bay might be better addressed. Those kinds of holding accountability only happens when you have to come back before a regulating body to be held accountable. And that's what we're suggesting, not some statewide takeover of the utility system.
Let me go back, get a quick call in here, 410-319-8888. Louise, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Louise.
I'm calling because I wanted to address the foreclosure crisis.
Okay.
Yesterday, there was someone who is running in, I think, the 43rd district, 41st district. His name is Will Hanna. And
yeah.
he has a proposal for a mortgage protection or a homeowner protection act. And I understand that would include people being thrown out of their homes for water bill and other things of that nature. Another thing that forces people into foreclosure besides the water bill is the insurance companies. The homeowners insurance companies, when they raise your rates, then the mortgage companies decide that they're going to raise your minimum payment and basically substantially increase your escrow account, which basically increases your minimum payment, and therefore you can't make your minimum payment because it's increased substantially, and that also forces people into foreclosure. So you have a number of things that are forcing people into foreclosures, and those are just one of them. I want to know if you're interested in the homeowner protection plan and what are you going to do about that part of the issue of forcing people into foreclosure?
Well, I want to thank the caller for her question, and it's a very comprehensive and a complex issue that many elected officials, quite frankly, really don't understand. What many people don't understand is that the banks, when they securitized these mortgages, they took out insurance on those mortgages. So I'm of the view that in many instances, there is no deficiency. They took out insurance on these mortgages that are worth 10 to 30 times the value of the home. And in many instances, there is no deficiency. We need elected officials who understand the complexity of the issue to make sure, as the caller said, we do more to protect homeowners and families. The current settlement with the banks, the $1.6 billion settlement with the banks that other campaigns are touting, at the end of the day, in many instances, are giving homeowners $300 to $800, Mark, for their home. This is not an approach that protects homeowners. It's a slap on the wrist to the banks, and we really need elected officials like Heather Mazier who are going to prioritize families and homeowners.
410-319-8888. We have time for one quick call. And Wayne, you're on the air. We have 3 minutes left, so I'm going to let a quick question. Wayne?
Yes, sir. Hey, I would like to ask about social services being placed in as a hub in the schools in the state, because a lot of these students don't live in the greatest living conditions. You know, their families are, you know, broken up, and you know, they have trouble with food and shelter.
So when I have to get to the question, we only have like 2 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Well, about putting social service halls in schools to direct these kids,
okay,
and their families in, you know, that, so they can have access to service.
That's a very important question. I'm only interrupting. I apologize because of the shortness of the time.
Thank you, Wayne. You and I see the world in the exact same way. Let's be more efficient about how we provide these services. And 3 years ago when I was engaged in that big rebuild of the effort to try to get school construction money for the city, I wrote an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun with Tom Wilcox, the president of the Baltimore Community Foundation, and we laid out this vision that suggested that as we get this money for rebuilding our schools, it provides us this great opportunity to make the schools the anchors of our neighborhoods again, to open up our auditoriums for allowing children to have access to after-school programs in the community, allow for community events at these auditoriums, co-locate daycare centers and social services on site, more school-based health centers. We can make the schools a hub of this activity, and no better way to try to incorporate that than when we're starting from scratch with multi-billion dollar investment in rebuilding our schools to create 21st century classrooms for our children.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here. This has been a great discussion. Delegate Heather Mazier, who is a candidate for governor of the state of Maryland, now a state delegate from Montgomery County. Reverend Delman Coates, senior pastor of the Mount Enon Baptist Church in Clinton, Maryland, who is running to be lieutenant governor. The Mazier Coates ticket. Good to have you both in studio. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate it.
I hope we can get you back here before
June 24th.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Love to have you back.
35 days and counting.
Got to have you back. All right, good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So on the way out, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. And a very quick note as we go out here today that Sam Greenlee just passed away. He's the man who wrote Spooked by the Door and did the movie. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. And we mourn his passing and our condolences to his family. Time for Sound Bites coming up, and we are going out here with what? Shorty Long, Function at the Junction. It's his birthday today. Stay with us. We'll write Sound Bites is coming up as we talk about the future of the Bay and hear a food and faith conversation. Don't go away.